All right. Let's dive into this. You sent over some pretty interesting stuff about the Inrid General Growth Properties bankruptcy case from back in 2009. We've got like podcast guidance, excerpts, perplexity analysis, even a legal brief, a lot to work with. Our goal here, though, is to kind of cut through all that and really get to the heart of why this case is still so relevant today, especially for anyone, working in law and finance.
Yeah, it's a fascinating one. I think the sheer scale of it, what happened with General Growth Properties, GGP, really grabs you. You've got this massive real estate trust, something like 750 subsidiaries, many set up as those special purpose entities, SPEs. These are, of course, legally separate with their own assets and liabilities intended to really isolate financial risk.
Right, and that's a key point here, right? That intended separation.
Absolutely. But then 2008 hits, GGP's got almost $25 billion in debt. And when that commercial mortgage-backed securities market tanks, refinancing becomes impossible.
So they're in a tough spot. And then in 2009, they do something pretty shocking. They file for Chapter 11. But not just the parent company, they pull in 388 of those supposedly bankruptcy remote subsidiaries. And get this, some are actually doing fine, solvent, not defaulting on anything.
Oh, yeah, you can imagine how the lenders felt about that.
They were furious, right? Crying foul, saying it was all bad faith.
Makes sense. It does raise the question, though, can a company that's perfectly healthy really file bankruptcy just because its parent is struggling?
And what does it say about those SPEs, right? The whole point was supposed to be protection.
Exactly. It cuts to the core of what good faith even means in a bankruptcy filing, especially with all these complicated corporate structures.
Yeah, the lenders definitely had a point. They argued those SPEs were solvent, good cash flow, no defaults, everything's fine. And our podcast guidance actually flagged this as a big point of contention, didn't it?
It did. Lenders felt the system was being gamed, especially because GGP had replaced the independent directors of those SPEs just weeks before filing.
Which really looks suspicious, right? Like trying to stack the deck. And our perplexity analysis confirms that was a central argument against the filings.
Oh, absolutely. It seemed like they were trying to sidestep those safeguards because, those independent directors are supposed to prevent this kind of thing, where a parent company tries to drag healthy subsidiaries down with it.
But here's the thing. The court allowed it. They let the filings proceed.
So how do they justify that?
Well, our guidance mentions this totality of circumstances approach. There were three big factors. First, and this might surprise some folks, the bankruptcy code doesn't actually require a company to be insolvent to file.
Oh, interesting. So even if they're not technically bankrupt.
Right. GGP argued they were facing imminent distress with over $1.8 billion in SPE debt coming due soon. And the standard legal brief backs this up. It literally says the bankruptcy code does not require that a debtor be insolvent prior to filing.
So the court was recognizing that things could go south quickly.
Exactly. They weren't going to wait for a complete meltdown. Second point, the court considered the whole corporate group, not just each SPE on its own. The brief says the interests of the parent companies must be taken into account.
So even if one SPE is okay, the failure of the parent could take everyone down. It's that interconnectedness, right?
Exactly. And the third factor, the director replacement, wasn't automatically seen as bad faith. The court noted the new directors actually had expertise in bankruptcy.
Oh, so they were brought in for a reason.
Right. Our guidance even quotes the judge saying lenders were mistaken if they thought independent directors were solely there to block filings, and the brief says something similar. If Movance believed that an independent manager can serve on a board solely for the purpose of voting no to a bankruptcy filing because of the desires of a secured creditor, they were mistaken.
Interesting. So the court's saying their duty is to the company, even if it means going against what some creditors want.
Right. Now, here's where it gets even more interesting, especially for those so-called bankruptcy remote SPEs. Despite their supposed protected cash flow, the court allowed GGP to use the SPE's excess cash as collateral for what's called debtor in possession financing, or DIP financing.
Hold on. So even though the SPEs were separate?
The court didn't fully merge them. That's called substantive consolidation. But they basically treated the cash as available, the idea being it would help the whole restructuring and ultimately benefit all creditors.
That's a pretty big deal. It kind of undermines the whole bankruptcy remote concept, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah. The guidance calls it a wake-up call. It showed SPEs aren't bulletproof, especially in a crisis like this. Lenders were suddenly like, wait, our money might not be as safe as we thought.
Makes sense. The whole market had to reevaluate how they saw these structures.
The perplexity analysis even mentions how the ruling challenged long-held assumptions about the effectiveness of SBA structures and raised real concerns in the market.
It definitely shook things up. So what does this all mean for bankruptcy law in general?
Well, our guidance boils the court's thinking on good faith down to three questions. One, is there a chance for successful reorganization? Two, will the filing preserve the overall value? And three, are creditor interests protected?
Okay, so it's not just about whether someone's technically in default right now.
Right. It's a bigger picture view. And according to the guidance, GGP met those criteria, even though the SPEs weren't in trouble individually.
The court really focused on finding a practical solution, didn't they?
Absolutely. But it's important to remember, this didn't kill SBEs. They're still a useful tool in finance. It just showed their limits, especially when things get really bad.
Right. They're not a magic bullet.
And it highlighted this tension between the desire for early intervention, you know, to prevent a total collapse, and the expectations lenders have about these supposedly ironclad structures.
It's a tough balance.
Yeah.
And that whole context of the 2008 crisis, that was huge, right? The court couldn't ignore that.
No way. The whole system was teetering. So for anyone listening, especially you law students out there, what's the takeaway from GGP?
I'd say it's a reminder that even the most solid legal structures can be tested when things get tough. And the court might have to get creative to find a solution that works for everyone.
Yeah, it shows they're willing to look beyond just the letter of the law, consider the whole picture, even if it means bending the rules a little.
Exactly. And it raises a really important question for anyone working on these kinds of deals. How do we balance the need for early intervention with the promises made in these complex financial arrangements?
Right, because if you're structuring a deal today, knowing what happened with GGP, how would you approach SPEs differently? What extra protections would you put in place?
It's a fascinating challenge. And this case, even though it's from 2008, it's still shaping how we think about risk, corporate structure, the whole world of bankruptcy law.
Definitely a lot to think about. Thanks for diving into this with me.
My pleasure.
And for all of you listening, keep those questions coming. This stuff is complex, but understanding it is crucial in today's world. See you next time.